My next guest is a little bit mad at me, I'm finding. I did not know this until today, but the acting Comptroller General of the United States, Gene Dodaro, is not pleased with me for a moment, aren't you, sir?
That's correct, Francis. I'm very disappointed I did not get a congratulatory email on the Steelers Super Bowl victory.
Yeah, I did promise that, didn't I, when you were with me the last time?
You did, Francis, but we can look beyond that now.
I apologize for that. And I will say on the radio, congratulations to Steeler Nation and to you in particular, sir, because it was a very decisive victory.
Thank you very much, Francis. I appreciate that.
The serious business that we have at hand is the stimulus bill and the legislation. And the Government Accountability Office, of course, has a huge role in determining that the funds that are being spent are being spent in the right way for the taxpayers. Talk about what you're going to be doing. You have a result coming out in your first report next week. Talk about what you're doing to work up to that and then where we go from there.
Well, Francis, we have been assigned a range of responsibilities under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. And the report that you mentioned about that's coming out next week focuses on one of the principal responsibilities we have, which is to conduct bimonthly reviews of the uses of the funds received by selected states and localities across the country. And we're required to then report on a regular basis. To do that, we've selected 16 states and the District of Columbia as a core group of jurisdictions that we'll be looking at over the next two or three years. Collectively, those states and the District of Columbia will receive over two-thirds of the amount of Recovery Act funds that will be flowing to the states and localities. And then we're also visiting localities within those 16 states.
Will the states that you're examining change over time as the projects in the stimulus plan are completed and then potentially projects in other jurisdictions start, or are you going to primarily focus on these 16 states in the district throughout the run of this legislation?
Well, we have a multi-part strategy. First would be to stay with these 16 states, and we pick them because over the amount of time that the Recovery Act funds will be dispersed over the next few years, ultimately they will receive over, you know, two-thirds of the amount of money. However, we will be analyzing reports from all 50 states about the uses of the money, and we will be doing targeted work in the other 34 states as appropriate. And we'll also be looking at, other information and talking with state and local auditors as well as the inspectors general over the next few years. We're closely coordinating with those entities. And based upon review of the state reports and discussions with other auditors, we will decide what work we will be doing in the other 34 states.
Now, you mentioned the inspectors general, and I'm curious to know what will you be doing that agency inspectors general will not be doing? How will you be collaborating, and what will they be doing that you're not?
Yes, soon after the act was signed into law, I reached out to the inspector general community, and we had a meeting here at the GAO, which was co-hosted by myself and Ms. Phyllis Fong, who's the inspector general of the Department of Agriculture and also the chair of a council of IGs that meet to coordinate their activities. We had either the inspector generals or representatives from 17 agencies here. Now, the inspectors general are charged with under the legislation with reviewing the federal programs and activities, and our responsibilities are to look at the state and local level. Now, obviously, because a lot of federal funds flow through the states and localities, it's important for us to coordinate. And so we've coordinated our efforts. We've also coordinated with Earl Devaney, who's the chair of the Recovery, Accountability, and Transparency Board that was selected by the president to carry out that board. That board is made up of a number of inspectors general. We've also reached out, Francis, to the state and local audit community, who we've had longstanding working relationships with, and we have had conference calls with most of the state auditors and their representatives and also local auditors across the country. So we're really coordinating very closely to make sure that we carry out our responsibilities in an efficient way.
Tell me about the relationship between your agency and the audit agencies in the states and localities, because I just had a guest on talking about Homeland Security, and that's been a bugaboo in Homeland Security is the vertical relationship. Talk about how that works in the audit community, because you ostensibly have been at it for a lot longer than the Homeland Security community, who's just been stood up within the past decade or so.
Oh, yes. We have what's called the National Intergovernmental Audit Forum, and that was established in the early 1970s as we developed the GAO in consultation with the audit community, a set of professional auditing standards that are generally accepted and used by all auditors who audit federal funds, whether they be public officials or private officials. And those forums, there are 10 regional forums across the country and then a national forum, and there are regular meetings among federal, state, and local auditors. And that has been really developed over a number of years to work on not only standards but areas of mutual interest and concern. For example, in the 1980s, the Single Audit Act was introduced to provide the foundation for oversight of federal funds at the state and local community in a coordinated fashion, so a lot of federal auditors wouldn't descend down on looking at the same particular grant activity. And that single audit area will be an area that will be important for accountability under the Recovery Act funds as well. So we have a very effective group. We've worked with joint audits with some of the state auditors over time and have a very good network. And it's very useful for these type of purposes.
I would imagine so. It would seem that with as many of these projects focused on individual either communities or groups of jurisdictions in a particular area, that to have essentially friends on the ground when your teams go to these areas to look at these is going to be extremely valuable.
Oh, yes. I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, they have longstanding relationships and experience with these state and local jurisdictions, and they understand and know what the risks are that are occurring at these locations. And so, we will be looking to them both for advice, but also to build off of the work that they're doing. I mean, there's no reason for us to be doing all the original work ourselves.
I am looking right now on my computer here in the studio at gao.gov/recovery and see that you've already loaded up a lot of information there, including a video message from a very handsome man from Pittsburgh on the right-hand side of that page. Very distinguished. But talk about the information that people will find when they go to the recovery page.
Right now, the recovery page has an explanation of our various responsibilities. It shows a map of the 16 states in the District of Columbia where we are conducting our bi-monthly reviews. It explains the range of responsibilities we have, and then it will be populated with all the reports that GAO has issued to date are already loaded on there on various related to the Recovery Act, and it will be updated as each of our reports are produced upcoming. So it will be a composite of all the GAO work related to the Recovery Act. There's a link to the government recovery.gov act that's required by law. We're required to link all our reports and back to the government website, which is run by the administration, and so people will be able to use it to navigate throughout the government websites.
It strikes me that this is going to be a repository that will be almost, I guess, at some point interchangeable with recovery.gov, because you'll be reporting back on all of the things that that website through the White House is putting out there, is giving people information about this is what's going to be coming, and then you're going to be a follow-up repository to talk about how the different agencies have done at making sure the work gets done correctly.
Right. They'll be complementary. websites. And I think, you know, our website will not, you know, seek to reproduce all the information that they're going to have available throughout government. And our focus is primarily on the amount of stimulus spending that's through the states and localities, although we have some other responsibilities as well. For example, Francis, we'll be reviewing all the quarterly recipient reports that are required to be filed by OMB guidance and by the Act as those are filed in the coming months. We also have responsibilities for evaluating the impact of the expanded trade adjustment assistance and special education grants. We also have a long-term project looking at the effect of economic downturns on state governments over the past several decades, including the most recent downturn, and making recommendations for federal policies to address those downturns, particularly as it relates to the increased need for healthcare services during recessionary periods. And so we'll be making recommendations there. I also had a unique role under the legislation. I was asked to appoint 13 members to a healthcare information technology policy committee that was set up under the Recovery Act for the development and adoption of a nationwide health information technology infrastructure, including standards for the exchange of patient medical information. And we made those appointments within the 45 days outlined by the law, and those appointments are posted on our website as well.
You have a pretty stellar lineup of people there, people just to run over the areas quickly, advocates for patients or consumers, representatives of healthcare providers, labor organization representing healthcare workers, expert in health information and privacy and security, expert in improving the health of vulnerable populations, the research community, a representative of health plans or other third-party payers, representative of information technology vendors, representative of purchasers or employers, expert in healthcare quality measurement and reporting. You've got a really diverse group of people there. Just about everybody who needs to be at the table is going to be there.
Yeah, we have a lot of experience. We also have, for a number of years, been appointing members to the Medicare Policy Advisory Commission, and so Congress turned to us in this case in order to make these 13 appointments, and so we had a search. We posted in the Federal Register that we were doing this. People nominated other people, and you know, we used our own knowledge in the area and did a broad search. I'm very pleased with these selections, and we've gotten very good positive feedback on their credentials.
My guest is the Acting Comptroller General of the United States, Gene Dodaro, talking about what GAO is doing to follow the money in the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. We'll wrap up our discussion with him in just a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We're back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is Gene Dodaro, the Acting Comptroller General of the United States, and we're talking about GAO's role in tracking the stimulus money that was provided by the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. And the website where you can find out more about what your agency might be doing is at gao.gov/recovery, and we'll have that linked up on the in-depth page later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com. And thank you again for spending time with me today, General. I appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure, Francis.
The other mandate, you mentioned in our last segment, the mandate to establish the Health Information Technology Policy Committee, and there's another mandate listed on the recovery site at GAO.gov, and that is to report on the Small Business Administration's effort to get liquidity flowing in the secondary market for SBA loans. This is something that has been going on for months and months. It's been hard for a lot of business people to get loans, to be able to grow business, hire people, do the things that they need cash flow to do. And SBA was provided some money in the Recovery and Reinvestment Act. You have a report out that's just been out for a day or two. Talk about what you found there as far as what SBA has been able to accomplish so far.
Yes, the Recovery Act asked us to report within 60 days of passage of the legislation actions SBA had taken to increase the liquidity in the secondary market for these loans and to implement administrative provisions to stimulate small business lending. And in our report, we mentioned that the SBA has implemented two of the key four administrative provisions, and those relate to eliminating certain fees on 7A and other loans, and to extend the maximum guarantee from 85% to 90%. That's to make these loans more accessible to small businesses, which are very important. There are other administrative provisions that SBA has yet to implement, but will implement soon in June, that would also provide lending to broker-dealers, for example, that purchase loans that would then allow the secondary market to operate more effectively. Now, one of the other things that we point out in our report, Francis, is that there are other activities underway at the Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve to also deal with increasing the liquidity for these small business loans, and we think it's important for SBA to continue, as they have been, to work with the Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve in this area so that things can be coordinated effectively. But this is very important because small businesses are very important to restoring economic growth.
And, of course, you can read the entire text of that report at gao.gov/recovery, and we'll have it linked up, as I said, later this afternoon on federalnewsradio.com on the in-depth page. How many people do you have on your team that are working just on the Recovery and Reinvestment Act operations?
We have a little over 100 people working right now on the work that we're doing on the Recovery Act, Francis, and you know, we were provided some funding under the Act, and we're in the process of you know, bringing back some people who are retired to work, some of which live in the states and localities that we're visiting. We're hiring some term appointments. Our funding that was provided is only available to us through September 2010. And then we're hiring up some additional people that we believe will be able to absorb through normal attrition. So we're very fortunate that, along with the responsibilities, Congress provided us some additional funding, and we welcome the opportunity to help in a very important area and appreciate their support.
General, thank you very much for your time today to talk to us about what you're doing for the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, and I wish your Pirates a little bit better luck than I think they're actually going to have this year.
Well, Francis, as I mentioned to you before, I'm a dedicated Steeler fan. That doesn't necessarily extend to all Pittsburgh.
Ah, okay. Bandwagon rider. Got it. Okay. General, thank you very much for being on the program
today.
Take
care, Francis.